Welcome. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinny Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week. And you can check out the archives at TheVinnyEastwoodShow.com. And I also wanted to remind people, you know, as I try to kind of like on a daily basis, this is my form of advertising. Donations and subscriptions are highly valued, okay? Even if you're giving $1 a month, even $5 a month or whatever, it makes a big difference because there's a lot of other people who are contributing little bits in little ways. So this way I've got income coming at me all the time from all these different directions, from all these different people. So it's kind of – it's unpredictable how much from day to day, from week to week, from month to month that I get. However – it always seems to be just enough for what I need for at the time. So, for example, right now at the time I need to get a warrant of fitness for my car and a registration for it. Otherwise, if I'm driving around and some scumbag blue meanie pulls me over, I'll wind up getting a ticket of up to $700 for driving around without a warrant or rego. You know, it's just freaking insane. And I also need a new hard drive as well, another external hard drive. I've got like a 3 terabyte one maybe about a month ago, lasted me nearly a month, 3 terabytes, because I'm just taking so much footage nowadays, you know, with guests in studio, all these public meetings and protests going on and things of that nature. I've got enough stock footage to make 100 documentaries easily. Easily. I've got so much content, it's just not funny. And maybe now without Facebook to distract me, I could actually start making my documentaries. But the other element is, of course, and this is the one thing that I dislike intensely, but I also find intensely funny, is people who feel guilty about not donating to the Vinny Eastwood Show. Why, bro? Don't feel guilty about not giving something. You know, you're not obligated in any way. I mean, if you promised to and then you didn't deliver, sure, you know, feel guilty about it. That's what I do. But you know, you're already listening to the show. So whether or not you like it, you're already contributing. Okay? Every time you talk about it with somebody, every time you share a link somewhere, every time you just listen to the show or visit the website or anything like that, there are hits being generated. Okay? And that amount of traffic can be used to talk to other people and you know, just kind of have me established, as it were. I would love to have a website and a radio show and YouTube channel, basically an entire media apparatus that is so largely accepted and widely popular that I'd barely even have to introduce myself to anybody, you know, if I go and ask a celebrity, would you like to come on my radio show? They would already know who I am and already be saying yes before I even open my mouth. Okay? That's kind of what I want. That's real, tangible power. What's that power going to be used for? You know what? It's going to be used for fun. Going to make some people laugh. Going to share some people some enlightening things. Going to expose some scumbaggery. All right, enlighten people, make them laugh, and expose some scumbaggery. That's it. If it comes outside of that paradigm, not interested. Okay? That's why I don't cover, you know, popular issues on this show. You know, I could be talking about New Zealand Fashion Week. I've been flipping through the old mainstream media channels just recently. New Zealand Fashion Week is huge. It's huge. It's everywhere. Even the main news sites, like TV3news.co.nz, have basically branded their entire news channel, their own website, as a New Zealand Fashion Week hub. George FM. Who Sarah listens to on her radio. I'd listen to it on my radio, but it didn't have the bandwidth. And now it doesn't even work at all. It'd be nice to have a car stereo that worked, you know. play some VinnieEastwoodShow.com kind of archives and stuff while I'm driving around, listen to these guests again, because this is another thing that I don't have time to do because I'm doing too much freaking Facebook. I don't even have a chance to really listen to the guests, because when you're sitting there, I mean, sure, you're listening, you're interacting or whatever, but if you don't repeat the experience once, twice, even a number of times, you don't recall it quite as well. And some of the guests that come on the show, freaking amazing, like mind-bendingly awesome people. And I wish that I'd had the forethought getting into this, you know, how much it would actually be necessary to have proper producers, writers, camera people, lighting guys, sound guys, video editors, audio editors, web guys, and so on and so forth. Like, I do as much work as entire teams of people can't do by myself. Reason for that is out of necessity. You know, I'm in New Zealand. I'm 10,000 clicks away from anybody. So there's only a limited amount of help that people can be, and that's usually through the internet. Incidentally, most of which organized through Facebook, which now will appear to be, you know, kind of non-existent, unless I can get it working again, in which case that would be nice. But how much work do you really need to do? And this is a question for other radio show hosts or whatever. Okay, how much work do you really need to do in order to get the job done? And how much are you actually relying on other people to get their job done in order to make sure that the work gets accomplished at all? You know, like at the moment, I only need to rely on one person in order to make sure my show gets done and completed. And that is the board op Adam at AFR, whose tireless efforts have carried this entire network since late March. You know, basically, he's taken the helm. He's producing everybody's shows. Every single host on this network would not have a show without him. So he's busting it big time. That's a lot of work. Okay. I mean, I see normal radio producers, they'll produce one show, you know, maybe like a 5 day a week show. This guy's producing everybody's show 5 days a week and some on the weekends, you know, taking Sundays off, of course. But yeah, that's a hell of a lot of work, isn't it? Hell of a lot of work. And the other person that I have to rely on in order to accomplish my show is just me. You know, I do the audio editing, get all those archives up on the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Do the YouTube editing, get all those videos up at youtube.com/Vincent Eastwood. Everything I do by myself. The descriptions of the shows, the screenshots. This is another thing. Whenever we get a guest on webcam, and this is what I love doing, is sometimes I'll make them laugh, and occasionally you get kind of a guest who, they're not really that humorous. And I don't really make them laugh, but, you know, then I get kind of all serious and start to have a very serious conversation. But when we are laughing, we're usually laughing together because I laugh at my own jokes. And all they laugh at me. And I laugh at myself. And then we take a screenshot of them cackling, and that becomes the picture for the radio archive. So if you go to the VinnieEastwoodShow.com/2013.html, well, the 2013 radio archives, you can get them off the homepage, and you scroll down, you have a look at all these pictures, and invariably, most of them are of me and the guests laughing our heads off. You know? I'm creating a chronicle of happiness. It's great. I've got such great ideas, but the thing is, it's too much work for one person. You know, I've been getting it done for a long time, but it's like, woof, the show's growing and it's becoming a little bit much, you know, and I've had to lose certain things along the way in order to keep getting it done. Like, for instance, I don't answer emails very frequently. I don't read articles or books or watch videos or documentaries really only got time to do one thing and one thing only, and that's my web operations here. You know, the Facebook promotion, archives at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com, YouTube videos, and that's basically it. There's that much time consumed just doing those very seemingly basic and simple things. We don't have any automated systems here. It's all, manual, getting it done. And then the other element of the equation is how many other people can produce that much work by themselves? 2 hours of crisp quality audio per day with ads and music, and an hour and a half of video in near-on HD super high quality per day, including in six parts. So you don't have to watch it all in one bit. I don't think anybody can. I don't think anybody has. Nobody's got the resources that I've been given by my listeners. You know, it requires a team of people to do what I do by myself, generally. And what I want to do is teach people my methodologies. Simplify. Stop caring about the little things. And you start focusing on the big picture, you'll be surprised how much more you can get accomplished in a day. And I think that's very important because we have a huge, huge opposing force to the alternative truth movement. The alternative truth movement. Is this even a movement? Is it even alternative? You know, I was talking in the cafe yesterday. I said, look, in this country, in New Zealand, you got those on the left, and you got those on the right, and then there are those who are telling the truth. Okay? I can't really encapsulate it any differently to that. If you believe in socialism, you're wrong. If you believe in capitalism, you're wrong. If you believe that there's a bunch of ruthless, criminal, sociopathic, scumbaggery pieces of trash have taken over the earth and sacrificing everybody like a virgin, a blood ritual in order to maintain some kind of satanic new world order, you're telling the truth. All right. It's just that simple. You can't boil it down. At the end of the day, you're deluding yourself trying to get involved in mainstream politics these days. You're deluding yourself trying to get scraps off the table from the mainstream media and so on and so forth. You may don't avoid them. I mean, let's face facts here. Not everybody is in on the agenda. Very few people, in fact. Otherwise, the agenda wouldn't even work because there'd be too many people in the know. It would have to be taken out. I'm sure there's quite a few people who suspect, and because they suspect, they're terribly afraid of it and will never speak out against it. You know, thank you, mainstream media. You know what side of your bread is buttered, don't you? That's why you don't mention most of the things that I mention on this radio show. I may never achieve any form of actual kind of, you know, recognizable popularity like somebody who, say, of Tila Tequila's statute. She's got like 78,000 subscribers on YouTube or whatever, been on the cover of Playboy magazine a number of times and so on and so forth. I don't see myself on the cover of Playboy. but you know, that's talking about mass appeal. I'm not really doing the show to appeal to the masses. Sorry. What I'm doing the show for is really one reason only, and that's to help people, particularly those who have stumbled across the truth by whatever means necessary. Some of you have come into it through religious lines and hearing about the New World Order through the Bible. Some of you have come across it from conspiracy lines and found out 9/11 was an inside job. Some of you have worked in particular industries and found out certain trade secrets and things of that nature, and that woke you up. There are so many paths to the truth. It's just unfathomable. Yeah, here we all are. You know, the one thing that binds us all together is that this is a harsh reality that we have to deal with. This is not Saturday morning cartoon stuff. We're talking about mass genocide, murder on a grand scale. We're talking about soft-kill bioweapons infecting every single orifice of your body at all freaking times. We're talking about a contaminated food supply. We're talking about a vaccination agenda to kill babies and dumb them down and give them autism and stuff. This is not light reading material that you have on a coffee table in a freaking doctor's practice, is it? This is harsh. And the only way you can deal with it, really, is to have a few laughs. Right, really, this is the main point of the show. If you think that all this stuff is way too serious, way too painful, way too stressful, you'd be correct. And so we're going to make some jokes, we're going to have a few laughs, in order so that we can deal with it. How else are we supposed to deal with this kind of situation? The world is a harsh mistress, buddy. You've got to be freaking kidding me. It's beyond a joke. And you see it. You see it in the faces of the people around you. That this isn't funny anymore. That this is really getting on top of us. That this financial crisis is really now starting to affect us in our own homes. How you're hungry because you can't afford the food. Hey, you're thirsty because you don't want to drink the fluoridated water and you can't afford to bottle water, not enough of it. How you feel toxified by everything that you're eating. How you feel irradiated by Fukushima and the whatever big plasma screen TVs you have to happen to have lying around the place. You feel saturated by cancer-causing chemicals and frequencies at all hours of the day. How in the frack are you supposed to know that? Like, really, really have it sink in. I know that this is happening to me. I know that this is happening to everybody else. How in the frack am I supposed to deal with that? Without comedy. Life is too short. It is too harsh to take it all too seriously. You know? I may be sounding very serious now. And I may as well be very, very, very freaking serious right now. And that's just because I understand reality. All these other people who are out there.
Well, you know, the feeds come up really, really sharp like that. Okay, we'll be right back after the break, ladies and gentlemen.
FreedomRadio.com 5 days a week, broadcasting for 2 hours a day for your listening eargasm, corruption, pleasure. I'm on with my special guest. It's Mortimer Davidson right here in the studio in the Vinnie Eastwood News Bunker. Welcome to the program.
Kia ora.
Okay, well, Mortimer, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and who you are and what it is you do?
Oh, my goodness. I'm basically just a Māori woman with a bit of a big mouth and try and be an advocate for social justice and a better world and all of those lovely things. I guess I recently ran for the Green Party in the Ekeroa Rāwhiti by-election, but mostly I try and just have a bit of a kōrero and speak as a Māori woman and as a mother.
Okay. And what's on your mind these days? Because there's a lot going on around the country that affects Māori, right?
Yeah, there's always a lot going on around the country that affects Māori. I hope everyone has had a chance to see the clip that has been put out about our right to protest at sea being taken away. And you've got the likes of Sam Neill, Dale Takitimu, Rikirangi Gage, Robin Malcolm, so many of our heroes and New Zealanders who are saying, this is not cool that the government is trying to take away our rights. And as Tangata Whenua, we have a specific interest in protecting our waters. But of course, that protection will be for everyone in terms of making sure that our waters are there for generations to come and are safe and healthy.
Whoa. They're outlawing protesting at sea.
It's ridiculous. I know it sounds like, what country are we in again? But they are basically trying to stop our opposition to deep sea oil drilling, dangerous, risky deep sea oil drilling.
So you're interfering with corporate pollution scumbaggery, therefore you're bad people.
I really laugh when Simon Bridges refers to it as protecting legitimate business, because the definition of legitimate business leaves a lot to be desired for. I actually think that protesting deep sea oil, which is, it's, you know, fossil thinking, is actually the legitimate business. So, yeah, absolutely, this is as ridiculous as it sounds.
Now, what I've found is that if something doesn't make sense to you as a person with a conscience, try and think like a psychopath, and suddenly it makes sense.
I'm afraid there's a bit of truth in that. It feels like there's a bit of truth in that. It feels like this power grab has now gone beyond anything reasonable. We've recently seen with the GCSB bill being passed, and I was, a bit of an advocate against that as well. And, of course, that has repercussions for Māori, for environmental groups, for anyone who wants to protect our democratic rights to privacy, really.
The thing that frustrated me the most about the GCSB bill is that the government and its departments and its people can break the law, and they admitted that they broke the law. They surveilled on 88 people unlawfully. Nobody's going to jail. Nobody's being charged. Nobody getting any consequence whatsoever.
Yeah.
So that means that there is one law for them, one law for us. That sounds like a dictatorship to me.
It really is getting towards that more and more every day. I think that's why it's important that alternative media like yourself, social media is where we have to now start rallying and waking up the troops, which is everyday New Zealanders, to be able to stand up and say, we're being done over completely here. We've really all got to rise up from the ground and oppose what is happening and educate ourselves and everyone else about what is happening.
Mm. In terms of being a Māori woman, what's your specific interest in all of this? I mean, I've spoken to elders and things of that nature down at the Temple of the Four Winds down in Te Kuiti, and they said that they're doing it for the grandchildren, more specifically those that are yet to be born, and that they're more important than those who are alive walking the earth today.
Yeah, it's a specific connection to the whenua and to our waters that was, have been passed down to us. The connection has been passed down to us through whakapapa, and as a Māori woman, we play a specific kaitiaki custodian role to ensure that we are using the planet in a way that sustains us and is sustainable, in a way that cares for people as well. You can't separate the way that we care for the planet and the way that we care for people. If we're going to intrude in the planet and be wasteful, that's exactly how we're going to treat humans. So there's a specific Māori woman's voice that needs to be at all levels of the debate about how we move forward in a progressive way.
Mm. And is there record of Māori organisations taking care of the land and the waters and actually having a lot of success versus, say, government-mandated control?
Yeah, totally. One moment. Yeah, totally. And not just tangata whenua, but Indigenous people all around the world who are stepping up and have always stepped up to keep our waters pollution-free, to make sure our land isn't being fracked and mined in a way that ruins it forever, so that it can keep producing our food, so that it can keep looking after us as people. But also, that is one of the reasons why I oppose the GCS bill quite loudly, is because the groups who are wanting to maintain our custodian roles and stand against the status quo and where we're going, which is dangerous, are the groups who will be targeted. That includes Māori groups, Indigenous rights groups, social justice groups, environmental groups as well.
Anybody who's not on the payroll?
Pretty much. And so the GCSB bill law now will be used to target people unfairly.
And we already have evidence of that coming out as long back. I mean, Keith Locke, Green MP, retired, has been under surveillance since the age of 10 when his mother took him to see a socialist, alleged socialist movie.
Look, I really give my heart to Keith Locke and people like him who have been targeted. And I've spoken with him. The sorts of things they are spending lots of money to follow him on. You know, every meeting he goes, he went to, what time he goes upstairs and comes back out again. It's absolutely ridiculous. And all strength to Keith Locke for having to had to tolerate that for decades, 40 years or something ridiculous like that. And he's one of many. And so we know for a fact that taxpayer money will be wasted on surveilling these sorts of people.
Mm. Have you ever seen the movie Prince of Persia, The Sands of Time?
No, I haven't.
There's a great part in there where there's this this criminal guy, and he's come up with this sort of a little kingdom, and he keeps it alive by spreading this myth and rumour that anybody who comes anywhere near this bit of land will be killed and destroyed or whatever.
Yeah.
And he says, the reason I'm doing this? And they go, freedom? Freedom. Taxes. I don't want to pay my taxes. And later on in the film, it turns out that there's a secret assassination sort of thing that are coming after them. And he goes, secret government assassins. That's why I don't pay taxes.
Yeah, totally. There's a lot of relevance that we can draw from a lot of the storytelling, including in movies and in books. People keep citing Orwell all the time, you know, but this is a turning time around the world, and we've got to really acknowledge that now. These bills and these legislative attacks on our freedoms are indicative of where we're trying to push the world in a harmful direction, and which is why it's more important for us that we stand now more than ever.
Mm. And you do feel that there is a growing well of support out there, but are people waking up to the false left-right paradigm?
Yeah, I think there's a bit of that. We saw with the GCSB advocacy, you know, the people in the town hall that night, 1600 or so, were from all along the paradigm. We're from right along the political continuum. CB was one of the amazing speakers, and he said very clearly, you know, I'm a right-wing businessman who does not want to be spied on. So people are, I think that's what was important about that meeting, was we had people gathering from all around the political globe, you know, political sentiments, and coming together in one place and standing up. And I think around the world, more and more, we will start to see those false brick walls come down.
What do you think is one of the main challenges for people psychologically with this kind of new way of thinking that both the right side of people and the left side of people on the political spectrum have been lying to you all this time, and that there's something else that's a grey area that's the truth that hasn't been talked about?
Yeah, I was just this morning, I was trying to get to the bottom as much as I could around the Syrian situation, what's happening there, and the US proposals to intervene. Mm. So it's really hard to sift through all the information that is available and try and figure out what is conspiracy, what is absolute crap, who are the relevant people who are credible, who can offer good information. So that is one of the challenges around the world, is trying to get to the credible, valid information and sifting through, you know, both extremes, at left and right, or whatever you want to call it. There is crap coming from both sides. So it's how to sift through all of that and get to, you know, what aligns with your common sense and with your heart and mind thinking about where we need to go and what we need to be talking about.
Mm. Have you had much challenges in this? Have you had problems with family, friends, that kind of thing, over coming out and being active as well?
Oh, of course. Of course. You know, with the family, it's around safety. Spiritual safety, you'll know this, when you put your neck out there publicly, it can be chopped off quite regularly. And so my family have been very understanding and standing by whenever they see me fall from those sorts of attacks. But mostly the support that I get from friends, from people I haven't met online, is really encouraging. And so that's what keeps me going as well.
What kind of things do you believe should be happening with New Zealand right now? Like, let's say this was a dictatorship. Oh crap, it is. let's say you were prime minister, you were dictator prime minister. What would be like a couple of rounds of legislation that you might pass if you had the power?
I recall saying in the town hall quite clearly that whatever the policies or the legislations are, we need to start from the foundation of the well-being of children and families. So that, for me, is a big thing going forward, is let's analyse and critique absolutely every proposal, every action that we want to put in place as New Zealanders, as the government, as communities, as whoever. And can we make sure that nothing we are doing is going against the well-being of children, is acknowledging the role of mothers as of women, as mothers, of family caretakers, that is uplifting our men to be strong, good fathers, good husbands, good partners. I think that whatever we do needs to start with that understanding. For me, that is one really important philosophy that as New Zealanders we need to keep very close to ourselves.
That would probably include a major restructuring of child, youth and family services.
Well, the welfare reforms, for example, are not about the well-being of children and families, in my opinion, and I've spoken quite clearly about that. If we were to look at the environmental destruction that is happening, that clearly is not about the well-being of children either. You know, we would have to overturn so many of the wrongs that we have been doing for decades if we had right at the front the well-being of children.
Have you noticed how ironic it is that you say that, but all of these pieces of legislation have been introduced by people saying, we're doing this for the children?
I would like to see them try and tell anyone that these protest laws are about the children, and I'd like to see them, you know, that when it comes to those sorts of laws, they don't even bother, to be honest. They don't even bother putting children up. But yes, you're right. For example, the welfare reforms have been, you know, masked as the way forward for families. And, you know, those of us with half a critique know that that's clearly not true.
Destroy the family by attacking its income and forcing the mother away from being able to take care of her kids by herself in any way, shape or form. And this is to help the kids.
But even more dangerous than that is stigmatising, say, single parents or young mothers or beneficial parents who are on the benefits, stigmatising those parents and drumming up hate from the rest of New Zealanders towards those families so that we've got someone to hate and blame. That is actually more dangerous as well.
Well, and that's classic divide and conquer tactic, you know. I mean, if you're gonna want to destroy everybody, just make sure that everybody thinks it's not you the one who's destroying them. Make them think that it's all the other people that are being destroyed around you that are the problem.
Give people someone else to blame for the social ills that are happening in our society so that we don't have to feel any collective responsibility towards fixing them either.
Yeah, exactly. I don't really care about the people suffering. I don't really care about single mothers or women or anything else. They're all just leeches on society. I work really, really hard and I pay my taxes, which I never got a choice to pay. And I feel very proud of that. And I'm patriotic because I vote for legislation that winds up destroying my people and my country, okay? And I'm doing my part. What is your problem with that, okay?
Well, there's also, you know, I'm looking after myself and my family. Why can't every other person in New Zealand do that for themselves? There's no acknowledgement of any of the structural bias that any child is born into. There's no acknowledgement of any historical contents that can shape a family or any child. There's, you know, let's not even think about those things because it's far easier to just blame the individual. And as long as we're doing our part and I'm looking after my own backyard, that's all I should be worried about. So that's the thinking that this government is playing on.
Which isn't really thinking at all. and one has to acknowledge that society is very, very easily manipulated nowadays.
Oh, that saddens me so much. I just, you know, bring some analysis or go home, really. And it doesn't have to be a lot of analysis. It's just try and pull yourself out of the rhetoric
of a right-wing neoliberal economic government and really think about the generations of damage that has been done by these neoliberal reforms and that has pushed the wealthy and the poor further and further apart, and try and understand that that is getting worse, and the way that we are heading, it will get worse and worse.
Mm. It's going to get to the point where you won't have any idea what this country used to be like, because they'll never tell you, because it used to be free. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com.
To fly to New Zealand by plane from New York City, it takes 22 hours. So from the Twin Cities, 19. I mean, I fly all the time, and 6 hours on a plane is like a lot, and 19 is wrong. And they distract you. They feed you, and then they feed you some more, and then they feed you. Give me a dessert. Give me a dessert. Give me a dessert. Have your dessert, you prick. Give me that dessert. Have a Bloody Mary. Yeah, give me a whiskey sour. Yeah, give me whatever you got. Just more liquor, more liquor, more liquor. And then when you're done, there's still 16 hours to go. You want to know what it's like? You can experience going to New Zealand.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from New Zealand, my little relatively expensive residential news bunker is what we call home. And my very special guest is Marama Davidson. Marama, you don't have no website or anything, do you?
I do. We have the Te Wharepura Hall blog page, and I'm on daily blog as well, but, you know, those are relatively hard to find. But my Facebook page is where it's all at the moment.
Ironically, considering what just happened to me today.
Yeah. But Facebook, Marama Davidson is, you know, the centre of the universe. Is where you can find everything and links to everything else.
Yeah, and we were talking about that over the break, about how the connections that we've been making, all the protests you and I have been going to, all of the public meetings you and I have been going to, even a play that you
I went to a play, and it's all from Facebook. And so, you know, we were talking about social media actually, though, has been an important tool for progressive groups, you know, whether you want to call them left-wing groups, but it has been an important tool because it's accessible. Because it gives people a voice who previously wouldn't have a voice. Any sort of profile that I have and which got me into, you know, being asked to stand as a candidate for a political party is purely because of a profile I've built up on social media. So I think we need to acknowledge that it's an important tool for the revolution, but we just need to manage it. We personally need to manage it so that we're not sucked into the Facebook vortex thinking that that's all that there is to life.
Oh, we've got all our eggs in one basket at this point. Eh? I mean, think about it. A lot of people have tried to compete with Facebook social media.
Yeah,
Facebook downed MySpace. Facebook downed
Bebo.
Facebook destroyed everything.
Yeah.
Okay, and now any of the alternatives that exist have like one millionth the amount of people on them.
I mean, LinkedIn is growing a little and seems to be getting a niche, getting into creating its niche for people who are a little sick of the OTT of Facebook. But you're right, I think there's a long way to go before any of the other social spaces can catch up to where Facebook has grown.
I mean, they've really nailed down an incredible system for attracting people, connecting people, and making it so user-friendly that even the elderly can use it. It's that simple.
My father is on Facebook. You know, there's four generations of us on Facebook in my family, so that's indicative of how accessible it actually is. You know, and again, the important thing about any social media is that, say you go to a protest, any one single action towards progress in our world, the lifespan of that can be expanded and has a longer lifespan because of social media. We can post it on YouTube, we can put up photos. Suddenly one single event turns into days and weeks of ongoing discussion.
Yeah, I do believe that this is one of the strengths of it. And when we think about, when we talk about social media, when we talk about the internet, blogs, YouTube videos, that kind of thing, essentially we're just doing what the media should have been doing all along, is giving the people a platform and a voice to say the truth.
We're doing what the mainstream media can't do, because we don't have the corporate and political restrictions that they have. We have a freedom and independence that mainstream media don't have, and we certainly are not bound to time restrictions. You know, I can find out on Facebook before any news announcement on television or radio that something has happened. I'll find out the second something has happened, where, you know, I don't know how much more life is left for the 6 o'clock news, because by 6 o'clock we know already. We know what's happened in the world.
Well, obviously, because they broadcasted it on the morning news and the afternoon news and the pre-6 o'clock news, and will also broadcast the exact same thing on Nightline.
Meanwhile, Twitter has exploded with, you know, 5 million tweets about it already, and Facebook comments and posts have erupted as well. So, you know,
and not to mention the news puts their spin on everything.
Yeah.
So if you get the raw information, you've got a much better chance of working out what's actually going on. I mean, I've got these two basic assumptions. If you want to be correct about something, or at least close enough to be correct without really knowing anything, yeah, you just operate under these two basic assumptions. If it's coming from a mainstream official source, probably the opposite of everything that they say is the case. And if you can't make it at home by yourself in your kitchen, it's probably some kind of self-kill bioweapon.
And also, it's not just mainstream news media that has been hammered by this, but if we look at, and this might be sad, but publications, including books, literature, fiction and non-fiction. So I now, trying to get informed about any issue that comes up, I'll go to the internet, I'll look at blogs, I'll look at articles and journals, I'll look at Facebook and comments from people who I think are credible and relevant. You know, I may not go to the library, because that information, for me to get to the bottom of an issue, to a place where I feel I can advocate about any issue, is all available on the internet.
Mm. Well, it's gotten the world to our fingertips, and as a result, we're now able to reach out into it and indeed plant things in it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like it's turning it into sort of like this this intellectual digital garden, and we're only just now seeing the fruits and vegetables of the seeds that we planted so long ago,
yeah,
trying to make sure that truth and freedom are not just things that people whisper under their breath for fear of being surveilled, for fear of being attacked by officialdom. Now it is out, bold and plain, in their face, and they have to deal with us.
The Idle No More movement, which is an Indigenous solidarity movement that originated in Canada, grew purely through social media, and all of a sudden I am literally connecting with women of First Nations peoples in Canada, and we're having Skype conversations and we're exchanging information. That sort of global connection on Indigenous rights would not have been possible without the tool of social media. So, you know, it's really important in using it in a way that benefits us.
Mm. Now, I don't know about you, but I really don't like this John Key character, you know. He's quite dodgy. Has he ever told the truth about anything? I mean, is his name even John Key?
So I've been very clear in my opposition against what he says and does. And, you know, so that's no secret. but what his policies are flawed, his thinking is flawed, and I don't think he has an agenda that has anything to do with the well-being of all New Zealanders. So he needs to be out. We need to oust him yesterday, so urgently, in the 2014 votes. We need to be strategic and get this government out. Again, I'm not completely sold on what will, you know, on if we can replace with something far better, because at the moment we're still stuck with the National Labour sort of majority parties. Mm. I actually think we need a whole new direction, or we need to at least keep whoever steps into government and power and Prime Minister chair, we need to keep them really honest.
Well, the way to keep somebody honest is to keep them accountable and to make sure that they have consequences for their actions if they do misdeeds.
Yeah.
So, do you think that we should have a code of conduct for parliamentarians? For example, if they knowingly misrepresent their policy, they can be thrown out of parliament.
It's an interesting idea, and I've come from working for 10 years in a government department, and we were all accountable to code of conducts as state employees. But you're right, those same codes did not apply to elected ministers and elected representatives. And I, you know, most of the time, so it would be nice to see parties be establish their own code of conduct and say to each other, listen, we have a certain dignity and way of discussing issues that we want to adhere to as a collective group. I know that the Green Party, my party, have clearly identified those sorts of conducts, codes of conducts and agreements. But failing, you know, the part of the popularity of the national government, I have to say, is when you get outbursts from people like Minister Judith Collins, who actually knows that she's stamping on the manner and dignity of so many other people, but she also knows that that's popular. And so it has worked for her. And people have seen her as a hero as opposed to someone who actually just lacks intelligence and any demeanour and dignity at all. So that is unfortunate that the National Party have actually used that tactic. And then we have my other uncle, Tohinari, who often likes to throw out some real snide one-liners that can be quite, you know, hating on particular groups.
Yeah,
that,
he's, those good are, he's good friends with my cousin. He was at my grandfather's funeral.
Those are the tactics that this National Party government and ministers like to use, and, you know, unfortunately it has sometimes worked for them.
Yeah, well, again, this comes down to the easily manipulated population. I believe that we have been dumbed down over the years through public education, fluoride, mass media, copious quantities of stupidity causing cocktails, drinks, sugary stuff, and crap. Our diet is crap. Our information is crap. Our education systems is crap. And this produces a population of willing and able slaves who are so capable of being manipulated that it's just not funny.
Yeah, we're certainly eroding the space that nurtures critical thinkers. And, you know,
but we're expanding the space that allows people to be critical of people who can actually think.
Well, it's a sort of parallel process. You erode the space of nurturing critical thinkers, and at the same time you build fear, you build misguided fear against certain groups of people as well. So that's been happening at the same time, and we just have to, oh, I don't know, we just have to wake up.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Marama Davidson, ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Unfortunately, that's the end of the on-air thing. Marama, are you pleased to stay for a little bit longer and we can record some stuff off here?
Sure, thank you.
All right, good, because you did come in pretty late.
I did. I thought you wouldn't want me for more than 20 minutes, surely.
Oh, come on. You know, this isn't some kind of a massive public meeting where you've got 1,600 people or something, you know, waiting to hear the perspectives of all different kind of people. You know, you've got to get some different perspectives, and if you want different perspectives, give them enough time to speak to find out what that perspective really is.
Fair enough.
We'll see you again sometime, ladies and gentlemen.
Bye.